If there are any questions in the hearts of the dervishes, that any, you know, spiritual questions that they have, might have, from their own personal moment, or, you know, more, or questions about the path. And I think we'll go from there. Saida brings a question.
Yeah. I mean, this whole idea of, you know, what you said, I think, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago about instant about thought energy, about your thoughts and controlling your thoughts, or being mindful of who you're, what you're talking about,
right,
what you're saying in your
right
words.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, you know, as we're trying to be more conscious of that, how, and connecting that to this idea of, let's say, you're thinking something and it's manifested, and sometimes it could be good and sometimes it could not be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm thinking something and I'm thinking, wow, that lovely Moroccan vase that sits on the table, imagine if that fell on my son, oh my God, and then it does fall.
Wow. Yeah.
Nothing happens to my son.
Thank God.
The walking vase rolls across the room.
Oh, it didn't break. That's interesting.
But it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a negative.
Why?
Because it just missed him by an inch.
Then it was very positive.
Really?
Yes. If it might have startled you and, you know, scared you, but it should let you... actually say, thank you, Allah, for protecting my son, that he has good guardian angels, and, you know, that he has a good destiny there, that he wasn't hit by the vase. That's a teaching. That's exactly that, one of those teachings there, of giving thanks for the spiritual protection that you have, that you enjoy, and your family and your children, who are such special beings. So that's not a negative. I mean, you know, Sheikh Noor was very strongly declaring there is no negative. The negative is only how we interpret it. Of course, there might be negative beings, but even those, it says that they're there to guide human beings. This is the interpretation, you know, of the rebel himself. It's only really to bring humanity back to God. You know, that he might think he's diverting humanity away. But ultimately, really, it's just bringing people back. So, yeah. So that would be a good practice for you, just to see everything as mercy and guidance. Guidance, you know. Yeah. What way do you, let's say, what does controlling mean?
I guess not controlling, but to be more mindful of our thoughts.
Yeah, to become aware, that's good, of what you're thinking. And then to, you know, because we have so much chatter in our head. I mean, often the mind is just filled with chatter and with stray things and, you know, the novel of Ulysses, you know, is a perfect example of that, of James Joyce, for a modern illustration of the mind that is everywhere in all directions and just kind of dreaming its own dream. But this is why, if we bring the guidance and the light of La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah, this is why we're advised to have prayer and to guide ourselves through zikr and tesbih, and then slowly we'll begin to calm the mind. The mind actually can calm down. It doesn't necessarily always stay like that, frantic, in that kind of frantically moving state. I mean, again, there are moments and moments, but part of our dervish work is to slowly but surely, you know, tame that franticness, and to bring it in line and to focus it. Because when the mind is chattering, when we're paying attention to that, we realize we're not really aware of God. Isn't that so? I mean, if you'll pay attention, you'll see that if we're following our thoughts, even, you know, we're not really in the presence. When we're really in the presence, the mind tends to become quite still. And then what it doesn't mean that there is nothing happening. What is happening is the real, you know, and it's happening from the heart and from the reality coming forth, not from, you know, this intense kind of Ferris wheel of impressions and moods and all that goes through us. And judgment, the mind is so much about judgment, so we're constantly moving around and judging, this is good, that's not good, I want this, I don't want that, you know, many, many things. Yeah. It's kind of like an accounting company, but that's gone mad, you know, it's like a bunch of accountants who worked overtime, the mind. So the dervish way is to just to keep coming to the heart and into presence and that deeper. And then as soon as we even just say that or feel that, all of a sudden we feel this root, you know, we're rooted. Well, we're not rooted necessarily in the earth, we're rooted in Allah, we're rooted in the truth. So this is how we want to move through life. We want the life of truth to move us and guide us. And so, alhamdulillah. Yeah, so just start seeing everything is good. So just put that, you know, almost like a program into your mind. Say, I'm going to see from now on, everything is good, and I'm going to find the good in everything. Or even if I don't know, you know, as in the case of disasters and things, then we take refuge from disaster. We pray against disaster. But if there is such a thing, there has got to be good in it. Of course there is. Because nothing happens that does not have good and bear fruit. And as we know, we've found historically when we look back, and Quranically, we don't have to even look back in history, we have to look in the Quran where Allah says, you know, I send them hardship, so they will become humble and soft and listen to me and become aware of me. That's what it's all about. Yeah. It's all just to return to Allah. It's all just to be in Allah's presence. So, of course, one of the ways of averting calamity, and that every sacred path has, that we turn through prayer and we become more and more aware of the whole purpose of our life, which is simply to be with God all the time. And, you know, usually in that state, we're protected. So just like your child. Yeah. No, I think that's a great teaching for you. I mean, scary for a mother, sure.
But relieved, because when I looked at him and I looked at the, I was just stunned. I'm like, this is ceramic, and it didn't shatter.
That's amazing.
It rolled on a hardwood floor.
That's amazing.
The entire table came down, and people.
Oh, really? Fine. Yeah.
And I thought it 2 days before. I didn't think it.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Right. As I was telling Julia, everything I was thinking was just
happening. Well, you know what you can do. So if you get thoughts like that, or things that you feel that you're starting to think or see or for, that's when you can pray. Oh, Allah, you know, protect against this. And because many things that are foreshadowed or foretold even by, you know, predictors or by the signs or something, they don't necessarily happen. They come also so people will pray. And that's like the people of Nineveh, you know. I mean, even there they had a prophet, can you imagine that, come and tell them that they were going to be destroyed. That was it. They had been lived so heedlessly and you know, forgetful of their Lord, that their time was up. But yet, so they fasted, they took off their fancy clothes and put on very, very simple clothes, and they started praying, and it passed. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So do you see the possibility? So today too, for us, when so many people are predicting, you know, bad, we'll just pray for the good. That's what Allah wants us, of course, to pray for the good and not for the bad. We don't pray for hardship. We don't pray for that at all. We pray for the good and for mercy and for ease and felicity for people and forgiveness. That all comes about through, you know, Allah's forgiving us and overlooking our faults and being, you know, kind and solicitous toward us, the loving cherisher that Allah is. So when you get those thoughts that are kind of frightening or seem to be predictive of something, just pray that, you know, they don't happen, or just that the good comes. Mm-hmm. Good. Alhamdulillah. And the wirt is very powerful for that. Yeah. Because it's in there. It's almost like every prayer we possibly need is in the wirt, the evening wirt. You know, that's why it's such a powerful prayer to open us spiritually, advance us on the path, and to protect us from calamity. Yeah. Is there any other questions? Santi, you always have questions to me. Ask me one now.
last week you were talking about looking at our life like it's a mirage, and I guess staying a little bit detached and looking at everything as
a mirage. Uh-huh. Well, but a meaningful mirage. Yeah, a meaningful mirage, exactly like you'd read a book, you know. So, but go ahead. Is that your question?
Well, the question is, when we're involved, when I'm involved in life,
yeah,
emotions take over.
Right.
The fear, the passion, the whatever it is.
Right.
And that makes it difficult to stay in that state.
Right.
Of being a little detached and watching.
Right. Right. A different way, you know, there are many ways also according to our temperaments. And some people are more naturally detached, and some people are more naturally attached, involved, and committed, and that's, you know, someone like you. So be attached, but just see it as Allah. See it as Allah. So see your children as Allah. See what's happening as Allah. And then you can be attached, and that's fine. But then know that, you know, Allah is also guiding all of this. Allah is radiating through it and guiding it to a good end. And so, the dervish way is more that way. It's actually, even though I said, you know, it's both. It's like a sailboat where you're going to the harbor and you tack a little this way and that wind, and then comes another kind of breeze and then you tack that way. So, you know, we have these spiritual guidances and we use different ones according to a different time. They're different modes of being. And it's like a great symphony or a dance that we dance with the moment. We dance with what Allah brings us. And so we be in different moods, spiritual moods in different times. But I would say just see it all as Allah, Zati. And then there's no need to detach. And then your great love for your children, your family, people, you know, is responded. But you know that it goes beyond the apparent form, because what happens, we apply an identity to, let's say, our child, and we think that's it, it stops there, it stops with, you know, this beautiful biological being and spiritual, emotional being. But what we fail to see is the one behind that. As it says, you know, using the shadow play, what they used to have in the... Today we have movies, but they had the shadow play. And so that's one of the great metaphors. And Ibn Arabi used it, and Effendi used it. That, you know, there's the one who's moving all of us, who are these actors in the play. But he's the author. That one is the author, or she, if you like. It doesn't matter what pronoun we use, or even how we conceive of that one. As long as I would say that we have love for that one, and reverence for that one, and such respect, awe for that one, doesn't matter whether we see it she or he. But I tend to use he. That's more my own mode. But sometimes I'm, you know, in a state where I see, in a way, the great mother. But in these latter years, I've been more in the... Doesn't matter, you know. Everyone uses their own language with God. It's all very personal. So, to be able to see that. So that's what I would say your spiritual practice is, to see the one who's moving behind. Yeah, and who's bringing all of this up, both for the teaching of the one who is embodying that, and for the teaching of the parent or the friend or the companion, or, you know. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question too. Yeah, Allah is the only creator, really. So again, the medicine for that thinking, like, do we create something, is to always give it to the one, you know. But we are also instruments of the one. So yes, I would say yes, we can. We do bring about things if we, you know, if we're... let's say we want to go to a certain place, so we walk to that place. Well, we have brought that about. We have gone from an idea that we have actualized. So that's a good example. But then you say, of course, we have control of our own bodies, so we respond to our own desire. You know, but we can also affect, we do also affect other things happening, definitely. We affect one of the great ways, again, how the lovers and believers affect is by turning to Allah and saying, please, you know, please, please overlook, or please don't let this happen, or please bring this good, you know, to me or to my family or to these people, you know. And again, it's said that if it doesn't come about, it doesn't mean that the prayer is not responded to. It just might come in a different way than we expect. Or it might come at another time that's better for it, you know. Because it also says that if everybody got everything they had in their mind, everything they wished, you know, the world would be a chaos. Can you imagine? Like, if you imagine every single human being and jinn being, whatever they thought in their mind or came to their desire body would come to be immediately, you know, can you imagine? It wouldn't fit in this world. I mean, it wouldn't, you know, everything would be like in total chaos. Because one would want the subway to work, another one would want it to stop, one would want the sun to rise, another, because they're a lover, they never want the sun to get up, they're with their beloved, and, you know, and so on, and so on. But yes, we can. Our thoughts and our intentions and our desires can. Of course, because we know the negative can affect, as we know, you know, that negative beings project and kind of carry like a cloud around, and they can spread negativity, and they can somehow bring about, apparently it's them bringing it about, of course, it's the one always, but through their presence bring about negative things. And on the contrary, a saintly being will radiate that goodness, like you have, you know, Effendi walking through town, or Jesus, or the Prophet, peace, you know, they would bring about good and change, and yes. And if they desired something, it would, you know, Allah answered that when the Prophet said, you know, my people, or when the Prophet asked, you know, Allah said, I will give you anything you want. My beloved, what do you desire in this universe? And his answer was, my people, you know, the good for my people. And so think of what that means for all of us, you know, that desire of his. So of course, the dervish way is more to align ourselves with those great desires, those great longings of the beautiful ones. But yes, our thoughts can definitely affect. They affect us, first of all. If we have a thought in our head, and we are immediately affected. If it's a kind of lovely thought and a good thought, then we're feeling light. And if it's a negative thought, we feel very heavy and sad or depressed. Or so they affect other people too. yeah, that's why it's important to watch our thoughts and, you know. Yeah, Ali.
Do the thoughts have power, or do you give them the power?
Uh-huh.
And how deep they are?
They have power.
Where do they get their power?
From Allah. And they get their power from our own. The human being has powers, and we embody divine powers. So thoughts have power. Of course, you can say if we give them power. So that's another thing to say. Let's say we have a fear, as you say. Is that? Give me an example of a thought.
So because the thoughts are like...
There are a million thoughts going through our head
all the time. Try to control the thought. The only thing that doesn't happen is the control.
Yeah. But there are certain thoughts that might be recurring thoughts.
That's way different.
Yeah.
Because if they're recurring thoughts, that is in a certain way. It's a real question. Do we give them power? The power of co-creation here?
Mm-hmm.
Do we give them power?
Give me an example. A concrete example. Give me a concrete example.
Let's say I came and looked at here, sit here, and then I saw that Mohsen is not looking at me.
Uh-huh.
And I feel very sad.
Right.
It's like,
shit.
Yeah. And then, and then what happens? This is really concrete.
Right.
I'm using this example.
Yes, it is concrete.
And then all of a sudden,
right,
I believe in that. Once I believe in that, then I have this dialogue going on,
right,
how to fix it or how to approach this.
Right, right.
But if I did not believe in that,
sure. Well, of course,
The other side of it, if I didn't believe in that, it could be possibility of the questioning.
Yeah.
What's going on with it, rather than what's going on with me.
Of course. But if you give, that's, sure, you can say that thought might only have power if you give it that power. But then it has power, you know. So yes, you can say that. You can say that, yes, that if you give it the power. Of course, so...
So they, in a way, they mm-hmm. don't have power on their own. Mm-hmm. They get their juice. Where do they get their juice from? We have no control for them coming.
Yeah, a random thought. Then otherwise it would be called a random passing thought. Has, you could say,
so
no power.
Has
power of distraction.
There
no, that's a power.
Thoughts.
What?
I call them pet thoughts.
Pet
thoughts. They have adopted them.
Right, obsessions, let's call them.
Pet.
Pet thoughts. Right. Of course, Ali. That's why it's so important to direct one's thoughts. So you can say, by not giving a certain thought power, you are actually directing your mind away to something else.
That's,
you know, it's not
saying, directing to him rather than to power.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. Of course, it all comes from what's vested in the human power. So wherever we turn our focus, that's power. That brings the power, and that brings effects. So if something will cross your mind and you'll say, no, I'm not going to pay attention to that, yes, you are disempowering that, whatever that is. True, that's true, yeah.
How else are you meant to change it if you don't do that?
How else are you meant to change
it? I mean, like,
right,
if a thought keeps returning back.
Right, right. Some
either
thoughts
you
become
it or
obsessive,
you
yeah.
We have to see that who's feeding the thought. Right?
Are you praying?
Where is being fed?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So maybe your brain is just obsessed, or the plasticity over so many years of having the thought has kind of made
no,
a
it's
pathway
true.
Or
it
something.
Does. Well, they found that.
Right?
Biologically, that there are grooves. I mean, what they call grooves is a very gross way when I speak to a brain scientist. But synapse avenues.
Crop in the
right.
brain based on what
yeah, sure, but I,
it's been cropped.
I mean, so I see patients every day, you know, especially
mm-hmm.
people with obsessive compulsive disorder, which is a brain disease where they have repetitive thoughts that pop into their head
uh-huh.
that they can't really control, that are intrusive, even if they don't believe them. It
right.
causes anxiety to right. even, you know, not respond to them, to try to suppress them. You know, for example, I might have somebody who's constantly has the thought that the pilot light on the stove is on and the house is going to burn down. And they'll spend all day checking it over and over and over.
They'll keep
point,
going back, even if they're in the house.
To the point they can't eat, they can't leave the house, they can't function or do anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think along the lines of what Ali is saying is, you know, if you give it the power that, like, yes, if this light is, you know, this pilot light is on, it's going to burn down the house, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen, then you do give it a lot of power to kind of control.
Right.
Whereas if you say...
Well,
okay,
giving it power in that case sounds sometimes like you have, you know, like it's an easy thing, or just give it the power, but you're bringing up an example, and we're not all that extreme, but many of us are in a kind of middle ground where, you know, we have to actually pull back. We have to make a great effort to pull back from those thoughts, from that kind of thinking, you know, repetitive, obsessive thinking.
And where is the role of attention?
Of attention. Yes, well, if you give it attention, but it almost pulls one's attention. That's part of the, you know, and that's why an initiation, a sacred path, is necessary, I think, for humanity. Because otherwise, humanity cannot handle the, you know, what's been invested in the human form cannot be mastered. And the only way we can master is by connecting to the true master, which is God, who is God. And when we do that through a sacred initiation or a sacred path, then we are under guidance, where it's like, you know, we're no longer like a car out of control or something with, can you imagine? Yeah, like a hugely powerful car with all now the computer and just working, without the pilot. And so when we connect to the master, somehow over time, it does take work still, but all of a sudden we are guided. Our faculties are guided, our thoughts become guided. It doesn't mean there's not struggle still, the great struggle. We have to undertake that. Nothing is automatic in that sense, but it is the way. That is the way. That's why I think human beings just on their own are total, they just turn into chaos, you know, if we don't have the sacred traditions and we don't connect directly to those sacred traditions. And then we get taken up by crazy ideas or, you know, and that's how you can have genocide happen, where people were living peacefully together and all of a sudden there's sweeps through these crazy ideas or terrible panic. What would you say, Mosse? Because you look like something that else comes to your mind.
I think that one thing that is, and maybe this gets back to Zaki's question too, is it's possible to kind of just observe the thoughts come and go. I mean, if I tell people in this room, like, don't think of a pink elephant, think of a pink elephant, everybody's going to think of a pink elephant.
Absolutely. Right? The opposite is the same.
Right. I mean, if you tell yourself, like, don't have this thought, it's going to strengthen the thought.
Right.
But there's, you know, I think there's maybe part of our work is to observe them and to allow them to come and go and not necessarily put our belief in the thought.
Right.
But as you're saying, put the belief in what.
But we need to place our belief somewhere. You see,
that's
what the point of the deeper path is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if we don't have a place to put our faith, our love, our desire, you know, for union, which we all have in ourselves, then we will become prey. We will be a prey of all the forces, you know, in the cosmos. So I agree, all of that we can observe, but how much better, you know, to be doing that as someone who's taken by God, you know, through a mystic path or through any of the sacred paths. And then it's a very different affair, you know.
Yeah. I mean, as we were talking about that, and I think whether it's thoughts or emotions, it kind
mm-hmm.
of applies
mm-hmm.
to the same thing, and maybe this is the level of, you know, being detached, because one can also step away from the emotion and observe or
right.
watch
that's
the
true.
The
you
emotion,
can do that.
You know,
yeah,
and,
you can do
and,
that.
And as we're talking about this, getting back to what you're saying, seeing right. where it comes from, you know, what came to me was the you know the verse in the Quran that says, "We will show them our signs in the horizons and
right.
in themselves."
Right.
So I mean, seeing them as signs, and then whose signs are they?
Right.
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 So.
Right.
Outside of yourself, as far as you can perceive,
right.
inside yourself, as far
right.
as you can perceive. What
right. So you feel that's a guidance for people to help heal themselves, or that's.
Well, I think it's. It's one thing on a practical level, let's
right.
say, as a practice
to observe.
Look for signs
yeah.
within yourself
right.
and see signs and not necessarily be defined by those
right.
those things, like an emotional
right.
state,
right.
to be defined by that, but to see
right.
it as a sign.
True.
And then if you go back to that verse, then it's
true.
Whose signs are you looking at?
Right.
If you what is the
true.
Purpose of seeing
true.
Those signs? If you
true.
Want to read the book of reality, then
true.
You have to learn to read those signs.
Absolutely.
But whose book is it? So what's the message?
True. So what I see happening here is that, you know, there's societies are immensely elevated if there are people within them, you know, who are connected into these spiritual paths, who are living them, practicing them, drawing the knowledge like milk from them, and then they radiate them out. You know, so you're a professional therapist or brain scientist, let's call you. And but when you come and encounter your patients, and Zati, when you encounter your patients, there's absolutely no question that they're receiving the light of the peer through you, you know, and they're receiving that guidance. And whether they connect themselves directly then or not, but still they receive an enormous benefit. So they fall under the canopy of the peer, you know. And this extends very, very widely. Everyone we have contact with. So it's a huge, huge blessing. So it doesn't mean that everybody has to, but you know, directly take hand or enter a mystic order. The families benefit, all the co-workers, everyone's benefiting. So, right. Yeah, and that's how it works, of course. You know, it that's how humanity evolves. But, you know, maybe everyone will. Who knows? Everyone takes their own path to God in some way, of course. Every path is a path to God. Every human life is a path to God, in God. But, again, there are levels of that path, and there are levels of ease and reward also. But ultimately, we just really take the path that is suited to ourselves. But, you know, we can be tremendously benefited. It's a mysterious thing, you know. Only Allah really knows how people come. So, alhamdulillah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Habir has a
question. Habir.
Absolutely.
Alaykum as-salam.
We've been talking about thoughts in the mind and training the mind in a way, or
right.
observing thoughts, not letting them sort of run away with us.
Right.
I wanted to bring in one of my favorite topics, which is reading and studying the Quran as a way to sort of feed the mind
right.
and give
right.
a framework
right.
for
yeah.
thinking.
That's very good. Yeah, that's a very good example. Sure, you're absolutely right. If we, that's so important to feed our minds with, you know, illuminated things. And if we feed our mind with sacred texts or reading the saints, that's, you're right. That becomes then, you know, the environment of our mind will become like that. You're absolutely right. So this is also what, you know, human beings are invited to do, and what we should encourage each other to do. So, you know, whereas if we let ourselves feed on negative things or negative environments or negative conversations or stupid, you know, and when I say stupid, I mean things that don't have really spiritual value or real value for humanity, then, yeah, that's what is going to be going on in our mind. You're absolutely right. So it depends what mirror we look in, and that then will reflect back at us. So if, you know, again, that metaphor has many levels too, but wherever we direct our mind is, you know, the watering place. So we do. We have amazing, you know, responsibility over ourselves. We are our master after God. We are the master. We are the one in charge of ourself. How amazing, you know. After God, it's us. And we often give that over to, and that's where, in a sense, you say we give that power away to the environment or to, you know, someone else or some bad circumstances or anything that we say, oh, well, it's that fault, or and we kind of obsess about that instead of saying, I better focus right now, starting this moment, that I am my own master after God and that I have the responsibility to bring myself to the most beautiful of places, you know. And that's hard work. And so we can spend the rest of our lives dedicating ourselves to that and doing that through compassion and kindness and prayer and praise and tesbih and singing beautiful songs and beautiful music and gazing at this amazing creation and taking lessons from human beings and what's happening on the earth and from creatures and animals. And, you know, that's how we should be using our mind if we're the master. So imagine, that's a good exercise. So imagine now we are all the master of this universe, you know, like in here, or the school teacher of this entire, the principal, let's say, or the queen or the king of this world here that we call ourself. Becomes a very different thing. And then we start, you know, we no longer are passively letting things happen. And in that sense, yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The true nature of the mind is real contemplation.
It's real contemplation. Meditation. Yeah.
And then to bring that about,
it's a mirror, really.
To bring that about is, it could be a pitfall, I think, because then it involves the mind.
Pardon?
To bring that about, it could be a pitfall because it would involve the mind. Uh-huh. But rather to discover that.
To
another way.
Drop into it, to go deep.
Discover that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the true nature of the
heart. Right,
part.
True.
Because it's already done by God.
Right.
And rather to discover that rather than make our own.
Right.
So.
To use the mind for contemplation.
It is. I feel that the true nature of
true.
The mind is pure contemplation.
Beautiful.
Because these books. Also mm-hmm. comes from Ibn Arabi, these great saints. There's great minds in there.
What?
Great mind.
Yeah? Oh, they have great minds.
Didn't Muzaffar Effendi said that the most beautiful
gift
in the creation, what did he say?
Is the mind. He said, you know, the greatest gift to us, in a sense, beyond our essential self, which is not a gift, and that's our essential self, but the greatest gift is our mind. Yeah,
I feel that
there's a
balance
point.
Between the gift of the mind through contemplation and where we place our trust.
Right.
So
what do you mean?
We habituated to put our trust in our thought forms and emotion, which happens constantly, and it's habituation.
Yes.
You know, it's a habit, like an addiction.
Right.
An addiction.
Right.
It's easy to see somebody smoking, but it's very hard to see somebody thinking.
Right. That's true. You know?
And then, but it's an addiction, and because of habituation, that trust, what's trustworthy, to give it to God, to the origin, that which creates us,
it's
maintained.
Right.
Instead of giving that thing, we put on something else.
Right.
It loses its true nature, covers it up.
True.
It doesn't lose it. You know,
true.
Because that attention that to go combined with is lost in wishes.
Yeah, we waste. I mean, if we could see, you know, like, if you imagine someone having like milk, water, honey, and wine, which are called the four rivers of Quran. So they are part of our own essential four rivers of paradise. These rivers run through us. And imagine if you saw someone just out there in the street and had giant jugs of milk, water, honey, and wine, and everyone was thirsty in the street, and you see them pouring them out, just spilling them over. We would be horrified. Well, take this to ourself. This is what we do with ourself. We waste our own potential by exactly giving it away, not cultivating it, not turning, really, to the source. Yes, Zuleika.
I have two sons, and the older one now is 14, 15, and I feel like this past few years, this connection, the spiritual level, that it's much easier with the 7 years old to have it.
Right, sure.
I feel like there's a distance.
Yeah.
And
that comes in the teenage years.
There's not a ritual. I mean, we don't go to church or to mosque. Or, to bring him to a place like this is so, I mean, at that age of being a teen.
Yeah.
I wonder, how do you bring that level? Because I think it's a very crucial time of it.
Yeah.
So I have a hard time to approach or...
Yeah. You practice it yourself. Yeah. If you practice it yourself, that's the best way, especially when they're teens. They're not going to be wanting to told much that they have to do something. You do it for yourself, and they will pick it up. That's the best, you know? Or you bring that into your house. You bring beautiful music or sacred music or, you know, of all these great Sufi musicians into your house, or... And you have beautiful calligraphy. You start putting the calligraphy around your house. You have some of the, even maybe sayings in English of some of the Sufi masters. You could even put that, you know, a little bit, one on the wall of the kitchen, or, you know. And that's how you do it, subtly. Yeah.
I think cleaning oneself.
Yeah, oneself is the best, but also you can reflect it in your environment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's right. I mean, and then you pray for them. Prayer for them is great. Just pray to Allah for them. They will get that immediately. You might not see the effects, but they're there. It puts a protection over them, your prayers. It says the prayers of a mother are so powerful. You know. Yeah. And undertake the path. Go right in, plunge right in. Whatever you want for them, do it yourself. So what we were speaking earlier about the thoughts, and in a way I regret some people left, because, you know, there's always reflections. There's like the wave, and then there's other waves coming, and just wanted to add to that discussion that, you know, that it's really love that saves everyone and everything. So, if one can love, that's the main thing. It's always that way in one's life, you know. We have the fasting part and the feasting part, and part of it is fasting from things, you know, and so that we can go to a deeper level. It's not really rejecting anything. I think that was important, and that's what I wanted to convey. It's not about rejecting things or rejecting art or a certain kinds of art or rejecting anything, actually. Nothing should be rejected in the universe. But seen with the, you know, the deeper eyes, I think that's what it is.